listening to Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Welcome back to the Dr. Lima Truth Reports. You're listening to the heartbeat of freedom and the drumbeat of truth. Our guest tonight is Vinnie Eastwood of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. That's V-I-N-N-Y. Vinnie, Y is the most important question. Now, Vinnie is a truth-telling social justice advocate of freedom and personal responsibility from New Zealand, which is why he talks funny. He has a show called The Lighter Side of Genocide, and certainly genocide needs a lighter side to keep us sane. That's what we've been talking about. You're now listening to the second hour of our two-hour Dr. Rima Truth Reports. Ralph Fusatola, my co-host, as always, is here. And I'm going to ask Richard, our outstanding engineer, to put Vinny's URLs on our chat here at Revolution Radio. And by the way, Revolution Radio is an outstanding internet radio station with some extraordinary hosts and guests and shows that you will not want to miss. So, of course, we want you to listen to Studio B every Thursday night here at freedomslips.com from 10 o'clock Eastern to midnight. We want you to be with us, but we also want you to make sure that you listen to the other outstanding programs covering a wide range of topics and intellectual and political spectrums. It's a really interesting station. Meanwhile, we have something else interesting for you. You are listening to two of the three trustees of the Natural Solutions Foundation. That's Ralph Fusatola, JD, and me, Rimi Ilebo, MD. And we're about to tell you about coffee. We're probably the only health freedom organization in the world that has an eco-demonstration project that has a teaching farm where we grow coffee. And we grow it in a certified organic farm, using outstanding techniques to teach the other farmers how to grow food without poisoning themselves, you, or the earth. That's why we have an eco-demonstration project in Panama. And the coffee that comes from the Valley of the Moon finca means farm in Spanish, is beyond outstanding. It is simply extraordinary. It is magnificent. And we have a coffee special for you. That is, if you order 5 bags of coffee, we'll send you 6. We'll give you a gift of the 6th bag for free. All you have to do is make the donation of $25 per bag for 5 bags and pay the shipping and handling. So if you go to valleyofthemooncoffee.org or .com, valleyofthemooncoffee.com or .org, you can order your Christmas special. Why not give something that is wonderful and helps your health and freedom to the people you care about this holiday season? I don't care whether you celebrate Christmas or Hanukkah or Kwanzaa or Yuletide or whatever you celebrate, or nothing. Maybe you just celebrate the winter solstice. That's cool too. However, coffee is a high antioxidant food, and it is enormously healthful, has many health benefits if it doesn't have chemicals lacing it and poisoning you. Ours does not. The Valley of the Moon coffee tastes exactly like nature intended it to taste. It's a fermented food. Did you know that? Did you know coffee is twice fermented? It is a fermented food, which adds to its health benefits enormously. And there isn't much Valley of the Moon coffee. We have a 10 hectare, which is a 20 4.5-acre coffee growing area. And when the coffee is picked and roasted, it's gone for the year. And what a pity that is. So I urge you to help Health Freedom, help your own health, and help the people that you are giving your holiday gifts to. Half-pound bags fit in any stocking, and if they don't, give them in some other way. Put them under the tree, under the bed, under the pillow, whatever you're going to do. It's a wonderful gift, and it says, I care about the earth, I care about freedom, and I care about you. ValleyOfTheMoonCoffee.com is the place to go for the perfect gift. And while you're at it, order 5 bags, keep one for yourself. You will absolutely love this coffee, I promise you.
Thank you, Dr. Rena.
You're welcome.
I knew I would never be able to survive, especially doing as much radio as I do, without coffee.
Absolutely. We all thrive on coffee, but Ralph and I are drinking Valley of the Moon coffee, so we don't get the jitters and we don't get the coffee toxicity, which is really not from the caffeine. That's a misnomer, a misunderstanding. It's actually from the chemicals that are sprayed onto the coffee and which then are extracted by the hot water brewing process into your Java. So you're drinking Paraquat, you're drinking Roundup, you're drinking 2,4-D, which is a component of Agent Orange. You're drinking, all kinds of horrible things that literally poison your body when you're drinking coffee that isn't grown the way we grow Valley of the Moon coffee. It's clean and fresh and has no toxins, and therefore you'll be amazed. You can drink it. Most people can drink it right before bed. No coffee effect except the delight of it and the sense of well-being that a delicious brew gives you. So, valleyofthemooncoffee.com. Yes.
Now, to talk about what you were saying earlier about how I talk funny, you see, I always thought I was funny because of my sharp wit, and now I learned that it's just a speech impediment.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. But I didn't want to tell you that quite so bluntly, because after all, we're on air, and I was sensitive to your feelings. But yes, you talk funny.
Yeah. Well, maybe it helps, you know, because the people that come from South Africa, I mean, they talk rather funny, and you can absolutely tell that there are some great jokes that they tell.
Yes, you have more experience with that accent than the people here in Chile. They talk funny too, but it's a total different language. Of course, we're not being serious.
Actually, I found out this very interesting prospect is that most people sound funny in their own accent if it's a very cliche of them kind of thing. Like, if they sound like a lot of people like that, that they represent so much of humanity that it's actually quite amusing, you know? If people talk in a very typical way, do you know kind of what I'm saying? Almost to the point of you are a walking contradiction in ridicule of yourself, and that makes your very existence quite amusing, because despite the fact that you have so much in common with everybody else, despite the fact that it's so difficult to differentiate you, you're actually still your own person in your own way, and you've made it work for yourself like a cosmic joke.
If you choose to be your own person. You know, there are people who choose to be as little their own person as they can manage, and that's tragic.
And it is certainly encouraged by fluoride, by a number of other aspects of our modern lives that lead us to become less and less of what we could have been if we hadn't been suppressed by chemistry, by what was the phraseology, Dr. Rima, that Bertrand Russell used?
In 1922, Bertrand Russell, speaking about how things should go. This was not said with regret. This was to encourage this to take place. He said, through diet, injunction, and injection, the average person will be, the ordinary person, sorry, will be unable to formulate an independent thought.
Of course, Lord Russell did not consider himself to be one of the ordinary people.
No, so certainly not.
Think. He would be allowed to think.
Yes, exactly. These people always take exemption for themselves because they're special. We're not. We are useless eaters. I was watching a documentary on elder abuse in the National Health Service.
Dr. Rima, are you there? I think we just lost Dr. Rima, or we lost Mike. There we go.
I'm still here. I'm not.
Oh, Vinny, that's good. Well, she was just going to tell us about an experience with the National Health Service, which is not going to be a funny experience, I suspect. Although
although
various types of health services can always be humorous in a sort of a strange way. Now, Dr. Rima and another good friend of ours, nurse Nancy Weber, Nancy Orland Weber, actually a psychic detective, among other things, but also a nurse. It turns out we're both at the same psychiatric hospital in 1971-72 in New York State, and they were both being trained there. They knew each other under different names, actually, and it was the hospital that was the model for the movie One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and they tell me it was exactly like that. And so art imitates reality, reality imitates art, and we are all, I guess, artists creating our own reality here. So
exactly, which is why there is absolutely no doubt there is no longer any creativity in Hollywood. Here's what. Two words.
Go ahead.
Rocky Six.
Monkey Six?
Rocky Six.
Oh, Rocky Six. Wait a minute.
Rocky, you know, with the Sylvester Stallone, you know, talk like this, you know, we had like Rocky Six, and then later on I even made another freaking sequel about it called Rocky Balboa. Oh my god.
All right.
There's no freaking creativity left in it, everything. Everything is all the exact same story, over repeated again and thrown in your face, all laced with subliminal images and symbols and metaphors and all of these different lines of Masonic symbolism and all of this kind of thing. It's an absolute dark period we are living in. This is not the golden age of television. No, 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 son. This is the dark age.
Golden age of philosophy either, I'm afraid.
Yeah. I mean, it was somewhat destructive to all our creativity to see the same thing.
We've been having a great time talking about you while you were not here.
Really? And what did you say? It's probably all lies. What did you say?
No, you were about to tell a story about the National Health Service, and I said, well, they're probably not going to be very funny, but let me tell you about Dr. Rima and Nurse Nancy Orland Weber and the psychiatric hospital they worked in the 1970s. And we were talking a little bit about, you know, the nature of all that stuff, and you're back.
How it was like the One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest model kind of thing, and we talked about how movies kind of tell the reality.
Oh, it was very much a One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest thing. It was an insane situation. It was in the first throes of the community mental health system being developed, certainly in New York. And the craziness that went on was beyond anything you could possibly imagine if you don't come from a totally dysfunctional, chaotic world. It was truly insane. And it's certainly the breeding ground for my huge contempt for medical psychiatry. And indeed for medical medicine, because I saw the excesses to which that system can be put close up and personal. And it's pretty horrifying, which was a confirmation for me of how important it was to practice drug-free medicine and psychiatry. And people say, well, don't you need drugs for anything? And my answer is, as a physician, treating pretty much all comers. Anything that walked through my door, crawled through my door, was pushed through my door, or rolled through my door on a gurney, if it was still breathing, I would treat, and usually successfully. It's much harder to treat people when they're already dead. It just is really so much worse. So,
well, there are a lot of people walking around now who are already dead, and in fact, the zombie apocalypse has become almost a symbol of North American reality. In the past couple of months, there have been several new zombie TV serials and a number of new zombie movies. Everyone in the media and on Facebook is talking zombies. There are cute photos of zombie kittens. I mean, it's...
So it's a meme. It's a cultural meme. And what does it say about us that our current meme is that we are dead but still animated? Would you say that there's some truth in that?
Maybe some Fukushima like truth. I don't know. But, you know, looking at it from the deep south as you are, or from off in the middle of the ocean as Vinny is, it probably is a different situation. It's probably
it's a lot better than my producer who moved back from New Zealand to California, is now 4 miles away from a nuclear reactor, just sitting there on the beach soaking up the rays.
Right, the rays coming from all directions.
here in Chile, one of our next campaigns, and I hope you guys are listening, you U.S. guys, you Chilean guys, and all the rest of you guys, one of our next campaigns, and we are dealing with the GMO issue right now, but one of our future campaigns that we're getting ready for right now is to make sure that Chile defaults on its pledge to build 2 nuclear reactors in Patagonia, the south of Chile. Patagonia is one of the most seismically active places on the planet. It's even more seismically active, they tell me, than Japan. So it probably doesn't make a whole lot of sense to build 2 major nuclear reactors, but we have been told a very interesting fact by a friend of ours who is the retired CEO of the second largest nuclear engineering company in the world. And he said, you realize, don't you, that nuclear plants don't make any economic sense in terms of generating electricity. As Albert Einstein said, it's a hell of a way to boil water. And we said, what do you mean? We were having dinner, as a matter of fact, with him. All 3 of the trustees were present for this conversation. He said, the only reason that nuclear power stations exist is to provide cover for the manufacture of weapons-grade nuclear materials.
Ooh.
Isn't that interesting? Now, think about the fact that immediately after Fukushima, and I do subscribe to the Fulford model of reality about how Fukushima occurred, immediately after Fukushima, President Obama announced that the United States would build 23 new Mark II and Mark III General Electric nuclear reactor stations, the kind that had just gone bluey in Fukushima. And, of course, immediately thereafter, we had the Calhoun nuclear disaster brewing. We had with the Calhoun nuclear station being flooded by the Missouri River, kind of overflowing, Mississippi River overflowing its banks and so on. And then 10 days after the Fukushima disaster, Piñera, the president of Chile, and Obama signed an accord to build these 2 nuclear reactors in Patagonia. So it's as if Obama took the event of Fukushima as a signal to ramp up the nuclearization of the world, including the United States, which really doesn't need 23 new reactors.
Hey, you know, if Fukushima was going to destroy the Northern Hemisphere, it doesn't matter if we build more nuclear power plants. You know, we're all dead anyway.
Under Reagan, James Watt was the Secretary of the Interior.
Yes.
And James Watt was an apocalyptic Mormon who believed that the world was going to end, according to the predictions in his sacred texts, in 2 years anyway. So it didn't matter if we cut down everything and dug up everything and killed everything, because it was all going to be over in 2 years anyway. Very interesting perspective for a Secretary of the Interior.
The Walking Dead is the zeitgeist of the Northern Hemisphere. People aren't talking about it. They are the Walking Dead. They know they are on some level.
On some deep level. You know, yeah. Last Saturday, we were invited to a birthday party of a delightful, delightful guy here in Chile, bilingual, lived in the United States for many years, splendid guy. And his sister, whom we also know, invited us to drive about an hour and a half to her house and have lunch with him. And then we came back to Santiago that evening to go to a world music concert, which was really cool. Anyway, we were sitting there when a passel of teenage girls came rolling in, and they were all dressed in rags and tags, and they had fake blood all over their bodies. And this was the two daughters of the lady who invited us and two of her friends. And I said, when they left the room, what was that? And the mom said, oh, they just came back from Santiago, where they went to a zombie walk. I said, what's a zombie walk? And she said, they all dressed up like zombies, and there was some music, some zombie music, and they had a party in the street being zombies, being dead. I thought that was extraordinary.
It's not just in the North. This subconscious... As Dr. Rima began this little section of the show,
I've got a good zombie story, though.
Oh, go ahead. Do your zombie story.
A friend of mine was at a protest, a zombie protest, outside the parliament on Halloween. What do we want?
Brains.
When do we want it?
Brains.
Brains, indeed. Yes, yes, the living dead need their brains. What I was going
to
say,
and they had to leave Parliament because they couldn't find any.
They couldn't find any brains. Yeah, they're in short supply.
You're going to starve if you need brains from Parliament, surely. So, Dr. Rima,
imagine just zombies like dead from starvation, just lying around Parliament. You know, it'd be quite funny.
So she started by saying, well, you know, all you guys listening out there, and she was not referring to our wonderful guests and our wonderful listeners out there, but rather to the NSA and their New Zealand and Chilean and who knows, Chinese equivalents who are listening in. And she wrote her latest blog. If you go to DrRimaTruthReports.com and go on the blog, see the latest blog is entitled Why I'm Not Afraid of NSA Snooping in the Social Media. And I guess, Dr. Rima, it's basically because all these years we've been wanting the government to pay attention, and now they have a whole huge bureaucracy to record our words and send them up the bureaucratic chain for us.
Yes, more people are reading us inside the government than ever before. Now, I have to presume that what you're saying, Vinny, and what we're saying and what all the other truth tellers are saying is shaking the certainty and confidence of a certain number of people who are reading and listening to what we're saying. And that's very interesting. We were at the Monsanto March. And by the way, the police here, unless you're rioting and burning cars and stuff like that. The police are not aggressive. They do not use tasers and other aggressive weapons against people. It's a very, very different climate, partly because the police have not been privatized. They are not corporate employees. They are public employees. Makes a big difference because the accountability is to the people, not to a corporate CEO. Big difference. The police in the United States are being privatized and part of what's happening.
And
what? Militarized, yes. So anyway, we were at the back end of the march against the Monsanto law that occurred a week and a half ago here. Lovely march, absolutely lovely. We've put up pictures on our Facebook pages and so on. And there were some cops hanging around at the rear end and following the end of the march. Very relaxed, no threat. And we said to them, do you know what this is all about? And they said, no, we just were told that, you know, we had to keep the march orderly. And we said, well, the march is orderly. This is about your family, your friends, your children, your survival, your being able to have more children. They said, what? And we started talking about what GMOs and industrial food mean to them. And we had a lovely dialogue. Now, I could only participate in a small part of it because, of course, not everybody who is a cop in Santiago speaks English, and my Spanish is pretty limited. But the people who were speaking Spanish to the cops were engaging them in a very human way. They were personalizing the dialogue. And none of these cops, there were women and men, none of them are going to think the same about this issue again. We gave them our action item link. They promised they would go to the site and take action and so on. And in that little interaction, and it was just a couple of minutes, we actually changed the balance of reality, you know, the tipping seesaw in the minds of two or three of these people who are then going to go home and think about this and share it with the people around them. This is a very important thing to do. You don't change a culture if you don't reach out to the individuals, which is what Nuri said, talk to the people everywhere. And so that's one of the things that you can do. I talk to people on subways and in offices and in restaurants. I talk all the time, and I give out the link, and I ask people to just find out more. And they do. They really, really do.
It's when you're contributing something positive to humanity that makes people stop and listen.
Absolutely. Vinny, how would you like to open up the phone lines so that people can call in and have the opportunity to talk to somebody who talks funny?
Hold on a second. Are you telling me to orchestrate an invitation to call into a radio show to talk to somebody who talks funny?
Yes. No, Vinny is a remarkable thinker and doer, and I'm inviting Richard to type out the phone number for us so that we can open up the lines. Richard, will you give us the phone number so I can read it? Okay. The Studio B number is 310-421-4053. I'll read that again. Studio B, which is our studio, is 310-421-4053. If you're on Skype, you can make a connection and a call to Freedom Screen 2. That's Freedom, S-C-R-E-E-N 2. And we'd love to talk to you. If you have a question, a thought, a comment, you know, with the wonders of Internet, Vinny's show, The Lighter Side of Genocide, is available both in archive and live. No matter where you live, just as the Dr. Rima Truth Reports is available no matter where you live. So there's nothing to bar you from listening to Vinny and the remarkable show that he has and the guests that he brings on and his delicious, irreverent sense of outrage and fun. It's a unique mix.
Yeah. Well, I think if you're going to be really angry about something, you better enjoy being angry if you have to do a lot of it.
If it's your job, you really ought to enjoy it.
Yeah, it's my job to be angry and happy at the same time.
You know, what do you do, Vinny, when people say, well, you know, it's not good to be angry. You shouldn't be angry. How do
Those
you respond
people
to that?
Are out of touch with freaking reality.
There
are
you go.
Out of your mind. Are you telling me that somebody comes up, destroys your life, burns down your house, kills your child, and you think that being angry is an unhealthy response? You're out of your mind.
How about you, Ralph? What do you think? Is anger a healthy response?
I don't think so. I think it closes off our ability to be creative. And I think we need to be as creative as we possibly can if we're going to succeed. We've proven over and over again that pushback works.
No, I think you're confusing.
Change.
You're confusing fear and anger.
Oh, let's talk about that.
Fear shuts off your thinking process. Mm-hmm. Anger, I've come up with some of the most brilliant schemes when I'm angry trying to solve the problem.
Ralph, I have to agree with Vinny. I think anger is an appropriate reaction. I think anger is a healthy reaction when somebody's trying to kill you, and the globalists want you dead. The globalists want you enslaved if you're useful to them, or dead if you're not. The globalists want your kids dead. They want to take over all your property, all your decisions. And I would say that not being angry is actually kind of not understanding the problem. But Vinny is quite right, I think. Fear paralyzes us. And if we feel powerless, then we feel fear.
That means you should never be afraid to be angry.
Yeah, right. For me, the issue is to take the energy of the anger, which I think is quite appropriate when somebody wants to kill and destroy everything that you hold dear, including your life and your family. I think anger is a pretty good, sane response. The question is, do you mobilize the anger or do you simply allow yourself to become paralyzed by the fear that is often associated with powerlessness when you're angry? So I think anger is pretty useful.
Especially as a great motivator. I think somebody told me once that on a spectrum, anger is like depression, except it's got motivation, right? Depression shuts you down, turns you off, because it's based on fear. Anger turns you on and turns you up. That's that when you're functioning sometimes at your highest capacity is when the thing that you are fighting for is your very life. That is when all of your faculties come alive. Every part of the brain is exploding with ability so that it can protect you from something that is trying to kill you. This is when we're at our strongest. This is when we're at our least predictable. This is where we are at our most intimidating to the New World Order, who want to keep us all docile and uncaring, to tell us that, oh, having an anger issue, you know, that kind of thing. Dude, you tried to shoot me. You exterminated 100 million people. Of course I'm freaking angry. I'm going to bring you to justice with that anger.
You have poisoned my child with so many toxic injections, and now you want me to bear the brunt of your assault on my child as the parent of an autistic child, and you want me to accept it. I think that's worth being angry about. Ralph, I really would love, Vinny, you don't know Ralph as well as I do, and I know that he is a very thoughtful and intense.
Can I encapsulate this? We're talking about a scene in The Lord of the Rings. There's some good in this world, Mr. Frodo, and it's worth fighting for. Okay? That's basically it.
So Ralph is a freedom fighter and has been for his whole career. Ralph, I would love to get your thoughts on this discussion.
I'm listening and thinking. I think you are probably correct that righteous anger is a phrase that people used to use, is a catalyst to action. We know, of course, that all human action is predicated on dissatisfaction, and so it shouldn't surprise us that that people might get motivated by anger, because anger is a good example of being dissatisfied. So yeah, I can, from a philosophical basis, I can see what you're saying. And until we open up the windows and scream out the window, I'm angry and I'm not going to take it anymore, maybe they'll expect us to take it. That's a very good point has been raised.
Well, precisely. And I do believe that if you don't have close attachments to things, and if you don't suffer, then you don't actually value these things that you have, and you often don't act to protect them, particularly if they've just been handed down to you your whole life. You don't really know what you're fighting for. All of our rights and liberties were granted to us more or less as hand-me-downs from previous generations umpteen years ago for dying in our stead so that we might be free. That's what I fight for. That's what I value.
What's happening with free speech in New Zealand / Australia?
You're not going to like this.
And why, by the way, does it seem that New Zealand and Australia, which are after all at least 1,000 miles apart, why do they seem to be grouped psychologically or emotionally or politically in some odd way when the two countries are really quite different?
Well, they're also quite looped geographically as well. If you're a Canadian or an American and you come to New Zealand or Australia, people will ask you if you're Canadian or American, because we honestly can't tell the difference, just like Americans and Canadians can't tell the difference between who's a New Zealander and who's an Australian. And Canadians get really pissed off when people call them American, and Americans get really pissed off when you call them Canadian, and New Zealanders get pissed off when you call them Australian, and Australians get pissed off when you call them New Zealanders. Yet, if a New Zealander and Australian meet together in Canada, they love each other like brothers. And if a Canadian and an American meet in Sydney, Australia, they love each other like their best friends and neighbors. It's a really messed up world we live in.
That's all true. That is absolutely true.
And
so,
these are four groups of people who have the same language traditions and, to a great extent, the same common law legal traditions. Imagine when the differences are broader than that. But anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
So what's the situation with freedom of speech?
Okay.
How free are you?
You say that fluoride is not good for you. You get editorials in the newspapers, full page ads calling you an insane person. If you call out police brutality, you get arrested without warrant and held for a couple of days in a cell. You have all of your phone calls and emails and any other communications accessible without warrant by the Government Surveillance Bureau, or the GCSB, which has an office of the NSA in its very building. And also, if you receive mail or contents or anything participating in a crime in the future, they can actually charge you for receiving something in the future. And if that turns up, then they can arrest you. They can bust into your house.
I don't understand that one, Vinny. Tell me more.
Let's say they wanted to arrest you for something. So what they do is they charge you for stealing, for receiving stolen documents or whatever. Because let's say you're a journalist and they've got a source or something that they want to cover up. So if those documents turn up in your post office box, even though you didn't send them to yourself, they can arrest you. Okay.
This all sounds very much like the situation in the United States right now.
Yep, they can also come into your house and surveil you, set up cameras, microphones without a warrant for up to 3 days without a warrant. And if they don't find anything, they can just retrieve all their gear and everything and then take off and never even file a report that the surveillance ever happened at all.
And when they bust in your door, the first thing they do is shoot your dog. And if you're, and you should be thankful that they don't tase your grandmother.
Yeah, the people who are in uniforms are not themselves. You take that uniform off, you're looking at a completely different person, and you view them very differently. They view themselves very differently when they're wearing that uniform. And what people don't realize is that those people in uniform that are supposed to be your authority figures are not the ones that are actually there to help you. They're the ones that are there to keep you in line so that you don't upset the current established order that gives them their frickin' paycheck, because they're not people, you know. Well, I mean, sorry, they are people, of course. They're just not there to serve the people. They're there to serve the corporation that owns all of you, that owns all your birth certificates. There ain't nothing for free, okay? You don't get protection for free. If you want to protect yourself, there are concealed carry permits, which some countries have, that has had great effect in reducing the amount of school shootings, hold-ups, rapes, violent crimes, and things of this nature. It just never gets reported. Because if 9 people get shot to death in a New York gun ban zone Wendy's, everybody hears about it on every network. But if 2 gunmen get a gun pulled on them by a 20-year retired sheriff with a concealed carry permit who holds them until the police turn up and we're about to assassinate about 16 people in a big grocery store or whatever, that gets it on local network, but that's about it. You know? There's no reason for them to report to you, to give you hope. They want to demonize everybody taking care of themselves. We've got massive disinformation campaigns towards they're really, really difficult to get a gun in New Zealand at all. And there's such restrictive laws that in order to own any firearm at all, you have to, by law, have an entire safe in your house somewhere that is bolted to the wall and floor. So that rules out a lot of people who are in rental accommodation from owning any kind of firearms, including those that are in high crime neighborhoods, which would actually very much benefit, statistically speaking, from access to a firearm for the purposes of self-defense against home invasion, muggings, and the like. Because as soon as you pull out a weapon, even if your assailant is armed too, they tend to run away, and you never even have to discharge the firearm, because who wants to get shot over stealing what they know that you've probably only got $50 tops in your wallet?
Do you have a weapon, Vinny?
No. I'm 6'4". Nobody messes with me.
All right. So I guess the Second Amendment in the United States does have some slight impact, because it is much easier to own a gun in the USA. And in the past several years, there's been an enormous increase in gun ownership and in ammunition holding. Of course, the American government has purchased huge amounts of ammunition also, almost as though people are maneuvering and setting themselves up for the next round.
Yeah, 5 rounds to be precise. Five hollow point rounds for every man, woman, and child. That sounds exactly like a thinking of a machine to me.
Mm-hmm. My favorite piece of that whole reality is that the Social Security Administration has some enormous number, hundreds of millions of rounds. And I figure what they're going to do is, when some grandpa becomes irate because his Social Security Part B was increased, he comes to the Social Security office and says, I don't understand this, and I'm not happy with the fact that my check was lower this month than it was the last month, they're just going to blow him away with a hollow point bullet to his chest, and that should limit protest and questioning in the future.
If anybody asks a question, just shoot it with a hollow point in the chest.
Exactly.
Oh, I love diplomacy. It's exactly. So civilized.
We joke about it, but there was an instance, a famous instance in Nazi Germany, where one day the SS went into the German Foreign Office building, Foreign Office Ministry, and went around and shot non-Nazi diplomats at their desks, dozens of them. So, you know, governments do behave this way.
Well, statistically speaking, you're more likely to be killed by your government than any other factor.
Right. Especially government-controlled healthcare.
Actually, that's the second leading cause of death, not including all of the accidents. That's just the properly prescribed medication. So if you include all the other stuff that really fracks up, then yeah, it's probably the number one plus 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 with a lot of gap in between that and anything else. But this is all part of the world that we live in. Now, you've heard of the holographic universe, the fractal? How everything is a repeated pattern of everything else. What I've found is that this exists also in the paradigm of conspiracy research, and I've called it fractal scumbaggery. Much like a fractal, you will look into one particular instance of scumbaggery or one particular scumbag, and then you will look and you will see that pattern repeat itself over and over. And to each little vein of scumbaggery that opens up, you can look even further into that and see that even more scumbaggery. And it's an infinite scumbaggery network that is completely and utterly infecting everybody, right? We're all living in it.
I think
some are doing what we can to fight it. But
I think that's a brilliant insight, Vinny. It's really quite extraordinary. So the scumbaggery, as you call it, which is a wonderful phrase, the scumbaggery repeats and iterates and iterates and iterates and iterates as you go deeper and deeper or larger and larger in the corruption. I would say that's absolutely true. That certainly echoes my understanding, although I never put it in exactly those terms. Good for you. That's iterative scumbaggery.
Fractal scumbaggery.
Fractal scumbaggery. Absolutely.
We have about 15 minutes left in the program. I know there had been some discussion of inviting comments from the audience. I don't know where that went. I think we sort of...
Richard, do you have... you're monitoring the chat for us. Do you have some comments or questions that the chatters would like to have us address? Okay.
Nothing. You got nada. Well, apparently people are not interested in teasing for the funny accent.
No, apparently not. Perhaps they are so besotted with the exquisite exoticness of that accent that they can barely think.
Not only do people say that I have the funny accent, there's a lot of the girls as well that say it's a very sexy accent.
Well, I hadn't thought of it that way, but I suppose it is. Ralph, do you find it a sexy accent?
That's a yes.
Hey, we love the accents of, I was just thinking, if New Zealand had 300 million English-speaking people in it and North America had 5 million, we'd be the guys with the crazy accent. That's all.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No doubt. And, there still is some regional accent capacity in the United States. There are recognizable local accents, and I think that's wonderful.
It's great. There's so much diversity. Like even in New Zealand, like you have the far north New Zealand, it's like, oh, bro, how's it going, man? You know? Then there's the Auckland accent, it's like, yeah, bro, how's it going, man? And then you have the South Island, was like, yeah, bro, how's it going, man? You know, they it's like the laziest accent of the country. The further south you go, the jaw moves less, you know, and more of the rolling of the R's, whereas you would say rural New Zealand, they would pronounce a rural New Zealand.
Really? I didn't know that. I've never been to New Zealand. I've never had a chance to experience all that diversity of language. That's fascinating. I didn't know that.
And often... Among men, there will be a persistent usage of the word bro.
Huh.
Almost punctuating nearly every other sentence. Oh, bro this, bro that. You know what I'm saying, bro.
Really? Yeah. That's fascinating.
Especially if you're from far north. And
say again? I didn't hear that last thing.
Especially far north of New Zealand. Very common trait. It's quite fun, actually. Guys from the far north are good people. And that's what, another thing that's very interesting. We talk about psychopaths a lot. And in fact, I just came off an interview with Chris Duane from Silver Bullet, Silver Shield. And we had a good hour and a half discussion about psychopathy and our own experiences and the identification mechanisms that you need. And what we've concluded is everybody, by and large, is actually a very good, decent person who's perfectly okay to hang out with. But it's only this very small minority of specific individuals that comprise that psychopathic mentality or propensity to allow themselves to be, shall we say, put under its spell. And it takes sometimes a very long list of victims to be racked up before one person stands up. And then after that one person stands up, all the rest of the victims then start to be emboldened and start standing up as well. And that is the two things that psychopaths truly fear. One is even worse psychopaths than them, and two is being exposed. And I think that it is the duty of anybody who has the strength of character and the true grit to see it through to the end, to expose the psychopaths that run our society. You want to know why society is crazy? Because psychopaths love power and control, and they weasel their way into the media, entertainment businesses, politics, every industry you could think of, law, medicine, religion. They're all there waiting to lavish up the power and control so that they can destroy everything that they touch.
You know, one of the most interesting books I ever read was probably the hardest to read because of the convoluted Germanic very, 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 very long, complex sentence structure that every sentence had. It was a book called Ponerology, The Study, The Science of Evil. It showed up in my mailbox with an address from Kamloops, British Columbia, and I had never heard of the person who had sent it to me. I didn't know what ponerology was. I'd never heard the word. And I was interested enough to start reading it. And then I became utterly fascinated, despite the absolutely turgid style, because it had been written in Russian and translated to Czech and then translated to German and then translated to English and so on. Long, complicated history as to how the book ultimately got written and published. Well, I contacted the person who had sent it to me, and they said, I don't know you, and I didn't send you a book. I don't know what you're talking about. So I don't know where the book came from and why it wound up in my inbox, in my mailbox. But what I learned from it was that, and I should have known this in a political sense, but I didn't. I only knew it in a psychiatric sense before I read the book, is that the reason psychopaths are so successful at seizing control of everything that they decide to seize control of is that we ordinary people are completely blind to the existence of psychopaths. We don't see them because we don't have the capacity.
There we are, Dr. Rima. We've reached the end of another Dr. Rima Truth Reports.
Yeah, I guess Vinnie Eastwood, The Lighter Side of Genocide, Ralph Fusitola, and I wish you a good week. Stay healthy, stay free.
And we'll see you all next Thursday night, folks. Thank you.
Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.